The Chancellor, Philip Hammond, declared that the budget would be for the strivers, the grafters and the carers, as he took advantage of a better-than-expected tax revenues to promise a £30 billion boost in public spending by 2024. We're going to have a look at that story very shortly indeed. Now, let's have a listen to what the Chancellor had to say.
Now we have reached a defining moment on this long, hard journey, opening a new chapter in our country's economic history, where we can look confidently to the future and set our course for where this remarkable country will go next. Because today, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I can report to the British people that their hard work is paying off and the era of austerity is finally coming to an end.
Well, let's see what impact this is going to have in Northern Ireland. Our economic and business editor, John Campbell, with me in the studio this morning.
Morning
to you, John. Good morning. So this £350 million, who decides how to divvy it up?
This is the city deal, £350 million. So that's also slightly to be arranged because effectively what the Chancellor has done is said, listen, we think a Belfast City deal will work. We'll now move to what's known as heads of terms, setting out the broad shape of any deal. Then all the individual sort of bits of the city deal, they all have to have a business case produced. That gets signed off. And then finally, the deal will be done. But that could be sort of a year away or more. There'll have to be what's called like a some sort of governance system in it, who is actually going to be in charge of distributing the money. The lead partner is likely to be Belfast City Council. It's likely to be them in the driving seat. But, of course, there are six councils involved in the city-region deal. It's not just Belfast. It's a huge region which stretches from the Glens of Antrim to the South Armagh border. So between them, those councils will have to sit down and decide which projects get prioritised. Because, remember, they have been looking for £450 million. They're getting £350 million. So you've got to think that whatever was in the scope of the original bid is now going to have to maybe slightly scale back a bit.
And it doesn't need an executive?
No. And that's specifically written into the budget documents because that was clearly a concern of everybody involved in the city deal is, well, what happens if we get this thing from the Chancellor, but then we've no executive and then the money can't actually flow? So it's specifically written in there that you don't need an executive. So the money would come from Westminster, I'm assuming, sort of into Belfast City Council as the lead partner and they distribute it. But we should also just be very clear about this.
Sorry, John, yeah. I know some of these questions will be stupid because they're coming from me. But they go into the city council, but there are many other councils that are affected by this.
Yeah.
So what would be to stop the Belfast City Council prioritising themselves?
Well, they'll have a binding agreement with their partners. So, for example, you look in other cities like Edinburgh. So there's an Edinburgh City Region deal, which involves, say, Edinburgh City Council and some of the surrounding councils. Edinburgh is the lead partner. They basically are the ones that talk to the government. They kind of distribute the money, but they've made agreements with all their partner councils about who gets what.
Yeah, but this is Northern Ireland. The agreements don't come easy.
No, well, let's see exactly, you know, what we get in terms of the final agreement about, you know, which projects get prioritised. Because there, when you look at the Belfast City Region deal, there are tons of things in there. You know, everything from extending the Goblins Path, Phase 2 of Belfast Rapid Transit, Gateway to the Mourns project, something to do with Carrickfergus Castle, White Spots Country Park and Ards. There's a ton of stuff in there.
So it's all tourism related.
There's tourism
stuff.
A lot of it is. There's tourism stuff, there's infrastructure stuff, there's skills stuff. There's lots of projects which are very reliant on the two universities. And actually, £350 million over 15 years is quite a modest sum of money. So there's other money will come in behind that from the councils themselves, from the pot of money that we have at Stormont, whoever's in charge there. And then the big hope is that you leverage in more money from the private sector. So the private sector will invest in some of these projects. So if you like that, £350 million is to prime the pump and try and get the thing moving. But like I say, over 15 years, £350 million is quite a modest sum, really.
And it has to be matched. It will be matched.
Yes, it will be matched. That will be a condition.
And that's already in there, everyone's agreed to match it.
Yes, exactly.
Where are they getting the money from?
So in all these city deals, there has to be matching. So that will come from each of the councils will have their pots, the universities are members of this, will have their pot, and then there's the Stormont pot as well. And like I say, because it stretches over 15 years, the amount of commitment that each of these organisations is going to have to make in any one year is quite modest. So as a condition of these deals, you have to have the matching in place. So I think in that regard, there shouldn't be too much concern. But like I say, the interesting thing is going now to see what gets prioritised and what might have to be dropped.
And is that not a recipe for a row, what gets dropped?
I suppose it could be. But, you know, everybody wants it to happen, so there will be negotiations. But, you know, you've got to think Belfast sits at the centre of this. I think Belfast is the economic driver for Northern Ireland as a whole. So you've got to think that, you know, that some of the key Belfast projects will absolutely have to feature.
And they are what? The Belfast projects are what?
Well, one of the big ones that Belfast wants is something called the Belfast Story, which is effectively would be a museum of Belfast. Because when you talk about, say, tourism in Belfast, you want reasons for people to stay another night. So at the minute, people will come here, they'll go to the Titanic Quarter, they might stay one night. So you need the next thing. What's going to get people to stay that second night? I've done the Titanic. What am I going to do today? Oh, there's the Belfast Story. So that's a big driver for Belfast tourism. There's also phase 2 of Belfast Rapid Transit.
But John, even on that Belfast Story,
yeah,
like who on earth agrees the Belfast Story? Who agrees the narrative? Well, whose side of the story will be told?
Well, that's going to be very interesting because sometimes when you talk about the Belfast Story project, people will suggest to you, actually, this is a Troubles Museum by the back door, because clearly there's, when you're telling the Belfast story, part of that is you're going to have to tell the story of the Troubles in Belfast. So, you know, that will be, you would assume, one of the big exhibits. And again, that's going to be very interesting about how that gets approached. Because you remember when the Ulster Museum sort of did some Troubles-related stuff and there was a bit of, you know, concern, is this a bit kind of bland, the telling of the story? So, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see the Belfast story, how it actually, if it comes about, how the story gets told.
Well, I've just made a film on the Shankill Bomb. Mm-hmm. It was the 25th anniversary. Mm-hmm. There's but one example, yeah, of a part of Belfast,
yeah,
where, you know, the victims of the bomb were in that film. Mm-hmm. A couple of days later, there was a commemoration for one of the bombers. Imagine telling that story in a museum, and who decides the story?
Yeah, well, this
Belfast Story Project has a lot of dilemmas in it and conundrums in it to, yeah, be sorted. And who, in the absence of an, yeah, executive, is going to agree it?
Well, you see, I think the reason the council were very keen on the Belfast Story is because it wouldn't be a Stormont-driven thing. It's a council-driven thing. So it's probably,
as if there's no disagreement within the council.
Yeah, it's probably easier to get Belfast City Council, though. They've been able to do deals and actually get stuff done, maybe in a way, and all the councils may be able to get stuff done in the way that Stormont hasn't been able to. And so, you know, you might think that's one of the benefits of a city deal as well, is we'll actually have some kind of accountable local democracy here. So anything which adds to that is a good thing. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right when it comes to actually creating the narrative of the Belfast Story. It's going to be fascinating about how that happens, how we kind of agree or don't agree the story of this place.
So as part of their confidence and supply deal, John, yeah, has the DUP delivered here?
Well,
they hold their hands up and say, we're the boys?
Well,
they
said that city deals was one of the things they wanted to advance as part of confidence and supply. Now, city deals aren't a new thing. They've been around since 2012, and they're all assessed against an objective set of criteria. So maybe you might have got a city deal without confidence and supply. But the DUP would very strongly argue that there was political scepticism about city deals. The North Ireland Civil Service weren't mad keen on it. The Treasury weren't mad keen on it. So the fact that they were able to kind of, if you like, push the Belfast city deal has helped. So they will chalk that up as another one of their confidence and supply wins. Something where they probably didn't do so well yesterday was in terms of tourism VAT and air passenger tax. So confidence supply agreement said they would be subject to consultation and review. That has now happened, and the government has basically said we're not doing anything on those. Firstly, because we can't do anything until we've left the EU, and then also actually, even when we've left the EU, we might not do anything. So Sammy Wilson this morning was saying he still thinks those two things are on track. To me, they look like they're nestling somewhere in the long grass at the moment.
Jim's in Hillsborough. Morning, Jim.
Morning, Stephen. How are you?
Go ahead,
Jim. You're excited this morning with all this money coming.
Why would I be excited?
Stephen, it's going to be good for the company, because you know the thing was bad there for a while.
I saw there we were reading that the Chancellor spent more money because of the better than expected tax revenues. I bet that's all from me.
And me too, Stephen.
If I pay any more tax, I'm going to squeak.
You know, I'm working since I was 14. That's hard to believe. And another year I'll be the big 650. And you know this here, if I've always paid the tax and done the thing decent, and I held my head up and I said to myself, well, at least, Jim, you've done the thing right. But one thing, Stephen, I've got to say here, and we have to realise, that the DUP went out there, and I watched it on television last night, and I was very disgusted with Marcelino Mueller, tell you the truth. Maybe that's not the right name.
Who?
I was very disgusted.
Marcelino Mueller, that yourself. Is, yes.
The DUP went out there, and they sought and they fought for the money, and they're getting it, and, you know, fair play to them. But there's one thing we need, Stephen, and I'm going to tell you this here before I go. We need the country up and running. And that's the main thing. And know who the people...
Well, do you think it looks any closer to being up and running?
No, I'm going
First of all, it is running, but do you think it looks any closer to a local government here?
Why, we're near up, but I'm going to tell you, there's three men I'm going to mention here should be sitting in a panel and getting the country going. You're one of them.
Well, no.
No, hold on. I am... You're the top telling them, see, could you get her up and running? Jim Allister's an arm man. And we have a big man over in America, and he could fly over, and you and him could sit on top and have a cup of tea together. Donald Trump.
My goodness.
Donald would have the country up and running in 2 weeks.
Sounds like a bad joke, this. Imagine me being stuck with Jim Allister for a start.
Yeah, we'll tell you, and Jim gets on the best. Jim's not the worst now, and anything he says is the truth.
Hello,
one thing about Jim Allister, and I've known Jim Allister over the years, he tells the truth, and the truth goes a long way.
Jim, thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Alison Morris and Nelson McCausland joining us today. Good morning, Alison.
I'm sorry for laughing. It's just the thought
the
of the, you, Donald Trump, and Jim Allister government running the place. I think I'd be on the first easy jet laid out if that was the
case. And Nelson McCausland. Nelson, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You would love me to run this place, wouldn't you?
One of those nightmares that might occur occasionally, yes.
Right. Do you think, Alison, people are feeling the end of austerity? Do you think people are feeling in any way a buoyant mood about the economy or extra money in their pocket?
Certainly not. And it's interesting that the Chancellor said we're reaching the end of austerity when we know that Theresa May had said not so long ago that austerity was over. Well, it's clearly not. But, I mean, you'd mentioned earlier on in your programme that later on you're going to be talking about the homeless crisis. And I work in the city centre and walk through the town and the number of people who are lying in doorways and sleeping bags who are certainly not feeling the end of austerity. There's a soup kitchen, a St Patrick's soup kitchen just up the street from where I work in the Irish News. And it's every Friday there's streams of people going in there for warm meals. So they're certainly not feeling the end of it. I think in Northern Ireland we have always... being behind when it comes to the economy and infrastructure, and that's just a legacy from the troubles and the lack of investment that went on in here over the years. But no, I think ordinary people, and if you went somewhere in the north of England and asked them, I don't think they're feeling the end of austerity either.
Nelson?
Well, the point has been made that the language used by the Chancellor was not quite as definitive as that used by Theresa May at the Conservative conference, where she was saying that austerity had actually ended. So that there is a lot of discussion about what the significance of that is. As regards Northern Ireland, I think that we should be looking at the positives this morning. The block grant for Northern Ireland, I think, has an increase under the Barnett formula of around £320 million. And at a time when, indeed, there are pressures in funding for health, for education, for other core services that are so important to our society, then indeed that additional £320 million will be extremely useful. And that's on top of the £350 million for the city deal, the £2 million for the city centre, and the Chancellor made specific reference to the bank building spire, and then the additional money, £300 million for shared education. So all of those things together, I think, do give us cause to be optimistic and hopeful this morning, and something to be grateful for and thankful for. The downside...
Do you think, Nelson, sorry, just on that so that I can understand, of course, last week, it was as recently as last week, or certainly very close to it, that Nigel Dodds and the DUP were threatening to paralyse the government and to vote down the budget. So is that? Do you think that's gone now? That threat's gone?
Well, the question was put, in fact, to Nigel Dodds, and he was very clear on that.
Was he clear? Because I watched the answer.
Last night?
Yes.
Well, quite clear.
How did you read it? So is the threat totally gone? They won't vote down the budget?
I think that it would be rather bizarre if we have an additional almost £1 billion there coming into Northern Ireland, and one were to turn that down. That would be rather strange. The two things to bear in mind are this.
But surely, Nelson, hold on one moment, and then we'll, of course we'll move on.
Yeah, sure.
But if the threat now from the DUP is gone, then the DUP has no leverage over the Brexit negotiation.
No, I think there's a misunderstanding here. First of all, we're very clear, I think, that it's very clear that the DUP is saying that they have a key issue. And that key issue is that there should be no internal customs border within the United Kingdom. And Theresa May has gone on record as saying that that will be the case. There will be no internal customs border. But when that was being mooted, the point was made that, and it was in reference to the budget, but it's an ongoing thing, it's an unchanging thing, and that is that the arithmetic at Westminster is unchanged. Theresa May has a government where she is reliant on the 10 votes of the DUP, and whether it be a budget or whether it be some other issue down the road, and there will be an endless stream of issues where she is going to be reliant on those DUP votes. The fact is that the arithmetic doesn't change. The influence of the DUP will be undiminished, and that influence is being used, as we've seen indeed yesterday, to deliver for the people of Northern Ireland.
But Alison Morris, do you see what I'm saying here, in that if the DUP are hailing this as a win, then it's a done deal? As you've, as Nelson has said, they're hardly now going to vote down this 300 odd million, so they lose their leverage at least over the budget with the Tory party. And now they're trusting Theresa May rather than threatening her.
I don't think that the DUP ever intended not to vote in favour of the budget. I think a lot of that was just bluster, and a lot of that was to basically stamp their feet and try and show their authority in Westminster. The reality of that budget is, if you cut it down with inflation and everything else, that it's pretty much stagnant. There's not any more money coming in than was coming in last year. The additional money, obviously, for the city deal, as was said earlier, that those city deals have been hanging in the balance since 2012. They're absolutely nothing to do with the Tory DUP deal. They may well have just pushed for Belfast to be given it first over the head of, I know Derry was trying to get a city deal as well. But apart from that, the only additional money that the DUP deal has brought in is the £1 billion. And we know that some of that has been spent, some of that has yet still to come. This budget, I think it was interesting that the Chancellor did mention Northern Ireland so much, and I think that that's probably the DUP's influence. But, I mean, he spoke about it a lot, but in real terms, if you take out inflation and you look at what other people in other regions are getting, we're not getting really any extra money at all. The only extra money will be the city deal, which I think was coming and had been agreed long ago anyway.
Well, that's not true. We're getting
Brexit,
£2 million for Belfast City Centre as well, aren't we?
I think that what's happening with Brexit is that more and more you can see that senior members of the Tory party are more or less preparing the public for a no deal. And I think that it's unfortunate that that's what way it's heading, but if we do crash out where no deal, that was at the stage at which the backstop would have come in, and that's the point at which the DUP aren't moving, that they're saying that the backstop can't give us any sort of special circumstances. And I think that that will be pretty dire economically for all of us, regardless of whether the city centre gets an extra £2 million or not. You could see the influence of the DUP in that budget, and the fact that most budgets, Northern Ireland doesn't get much of a mention at all. It was mentioned, but I mean, a lot of that, as you can see, is what usually happens where budgets. There's a lot of cutting of the numbers, and a lot of money that would have been coming anyway is highlighted as if it was extra money. And I think that's what happened in a lot of cases there. But no, I don't think the DUP ever intended not to vote with Theresa May in relation to the budget. I think a lot of that was for sure.
Here's John in North Belfast. Morning, John.
I just find the DUP amazing. This is what... Those sleeping rough on the increase. Universal credit being rolled out, those in private rental will probably be losing their homes. Food bank on the increase and benefits frozen. So who's paying for all this? Those at the bottom of the ladder yet again. And the DUP are up saying this is an amazing budget. They should vote down the budget.
They should vote down the budget?
They should vote down the budget because those at the bottom of the ladder, Stephen, are suffering and will continue to suffer under this Tory government. So what's the DUP going to say to their constituents in private rental in Northern Ireland when they start losing their homes?
Well, how are they going to lose their homes? How are you getting to that?
Well, when universal credit's rolled out, it's already been spoken about.
Well, the Chancellor, of course, announced more...
Landlords will not wait for their rent.
The Chancellor, of course, announced more money, more flexibility into universal credit yesterday, didn't he?
Yes, Stephen. But there's still over £30 billion to be taken out of that budget. So who's going to suffer? Those, again, at the lowest of the ladder.
Nelson?
Well, the DUP historically welcomed the concept of universal credit because the idea of a simpler system was a good idea. What was the difficulty at the time was that George Osborne then used that as an opportunity to take money out of the system. And that shouldn't have happened. That was not the idea of Ian Duncan Smith, who was the architect of universal credit. The DUP also at that time, if you recall, introduced through Northern Ireland certain variances from the system in GB because they recognised that the system potentially could cause real difficulties.
Did Sinn Féin not force their hand on that?
No. I know because I was actually the minister in the department at the time in social development who worked with the Department for Work and Pensions in London to secure, for example, direct payments to landlords. That was something that Ian Duncan Smith was opposed to, but we secured that for the people in Northern Ireland because historically, most people in Northern Ireland have had their benefit paid, their rent paid directly to the landlord. And what's recognised now is that more and more people in GB are saying that's the way it should be.
Nelson, the Royal benefit reform nearly brought Stormont to a standstill.
Well, I think the fact is that there was a lot of game playing there by Sinn Féin at that time. The fact is that it was the DUP through the Department for Social Development that was involved in the negotiations with the Department for Work and Pensions
okay.
to make sure that we got the best outcome
all right.
for Northern Ireland.
Here's William and Bell. Tim Atwood, SLP Councillor. Tim Atwood. Morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Good morning. You contacted us, Tim, about the city deal.
Yes. Well, I think the comments around welfare reform are well made. There's a lot of people who are suffering deeply today, and the budget doesn't help those, whether they're on welfare or homeless. But I just want to pick up on the city deal and pick up some of your comments, Stephen, because obviously it was Mark Durkin in Derry 4 years ago and the SDLP in Belfast 3 years ago that first brought motions saying there should be city deals for Belfast and the North West. It's long overdue. Every English city, most of the major cities in Scotland and Wales have already had their city deals and they're implementing them. So we're a wee bit behind. The city deal that was announced yesterday for the region, I think, is I have a cautious welcome for it because we were looking for 450 million, but it's only 350 million. So, but do not underestimate the work that's gone on among the six councils and the two universities. You were saying, how will people get agreement? To get to this stage needed a remarkable partnership between the six councils and the universities to bring forward real value-added projects.
So you're telling me the agreements are already in place. The agreements had to be there before the application went in. Is that what you're saying?
You had to make the first business case to Treasury in relation to this case.
Right. Well, as I was saying, Tim, to John Campbell, this story of Belfast project. So from what you're saying, there's agreement already in place around that. So who's deciding the narrative? Who's deciding the story?
One second, Stephen. See, you're just stepping forward too quickly. The first point I want to make is that there is business cases that we made to Treasury that mean the proposals that we put in to date stack up. Now, obviously, with less money, we have to do a lot more work to ensure they are GVA added. But there's a good working relationship among all councils in the north, among all political parties in this regional city region. So let's not underestimate that. In terms of the Belfast story, let's be real about it. No, not everything is agreed. But I take it you have not been in City Hall and seen the exhibition that the parties in City Hall developed over the last 2 years, which is an exhibition covering the history of City Hall, the crack, the characters, and some of the contested history around the Covenant.
So with the but with the with look, if I'm way off piste here, then you know others can decide that. You're telling me that it will be easy to tell the Belfast story. That will not be a central point of contention.
Of course it is. But Stephen, what I'm saying to you, take a step out today into City Hall and see what the political parties in Belfast City Council of all colours and creeds came to an agreement about in terms of part of the history of Belfast in that exhibition. We came to agreement.
Look at what happened over the maze, Roy.
But that's exactly. Belfast City Council have shown that we are capable of developing an inclusive, excellent exhibition in City Hall that is as earned plaudits, and it covers some of the contested history.
So the Belfast story, the Europa, the most bombed hotel in the world, or whatever that story is, was it a legitimate target? What's the story around that? The Shankill bomb, was Begley a victim or a perpetrator? What's the story around that?
Stephen, that's the challenge. What I'm saying is, if we were able to get agreement around the exhibition in City Hall to make City Hall more inclusive and cover all those narratives, then I think Belfast City Council is well placed to get agreement around the story of Belfast in the future. We've shown leadership in that respect. We've shown we can turn City Hall into a more inclusive place for all people in Belfast, including the new ethnic minorities, by that exhibition. That's the challenge that we will face.
Is the Belfast story going to be in Irish and as well as English?
The narratives will all have to be covered. And what I'm saying is we've achieved that already. And if you go to City Hall, you will see that in place today. That's the challenge.
I'm going to take a pop round this afternoon.
Is it open?
Will they let me in?
Of course they will. We'll get a range of... Even Jim Rogers will show you around.
No. William in Belfast. Morning, William.
Slightly different. There's no way I said a giveaway budget, but it's a mild budget for all parts of the United Kingdom. Now, I'm surprised that you're not turning around and saying, where's this money coming from? We were told it'd be 800,000 people out of work that we only voted to leave. We were told it'd be £4,000 a year each household if we only voted to leave. We were told all these things didn't happen. Now we're told there'll be a different vote if we don't get a deal, which is all part of the scare tactics. I think you guys that interview people need to hold people accountable for these statements.
Well, Alison Morris, it's actually a good question from William. Where is the money coming from? How come there's 350 million between all of these councils to match?
I think that the issue with that was, as Tim said, that business plan was already done quite some time ago. And the money, you would assume, if it's coming from the council, it has to come from the ratepayers. And there's also, as John Campbell said, they're going to have to try and get private investment for some of, especially the touristy type elements of it, to try and bolster up that investment. But regards to Belfast and what you were saying about the story of Belfast, we're about so much more, you know, than the Troubles. And recently I was looking at my own family's history, and if you go back to that and you go back to the sort of the industrial story of Belfast and the docks and all those sort of things, which I don't think that we've told before. And I'm assuming you could get an agreement. And if you ever sit in the councils and watch how the councils work, and it's been a long time when I was a junior reporter and sat covering council meetings, it's amazing that when Stormont was collapsing and all the political scandals were going on, the councils always took over and they always managed to make decisions and make agreements and make votes. And the DUP and Sinn Féin, even at times when publicly they were at loggerheads, you could see that their councillors worked very well together. So it'll be interesting to see if we can manage the advance the city deal quicker than we can advance some of the other outstanding issues, which have been left hanging in limbo since the collapse of Stormont.
Alison, thank you. Nelson McCausland, thank you.